With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi there and welcome to Stock Club, a podcast brought to you by My Wall Street. I'm James and joining me on today's episode are Mike and Emmett from the My Wall Street analyst teams. Today, we're talking about Apple nearing a $3 trillion valuation, Harley-Davidson's electric motorbike SPAC, and if Coinbase could be a good pick-and-shovel play for the growing crypto industry. So, Emmett, Mike, welcome to Stock Club. In the last week, one of our favorite people to talk about here, Elon Musk, has been named as Time's Person of the Year. We might hold our comment on what we think about Elon Musk being named Person of the Year, but I'm curious here, who do you guys think should have been named Person of the Year? Was Elon worthy of it, or would you have picked somebody else?
I think from like an investing perspective, like it was Elon Musk. We were talking about him constantly, and it got annoying at the end. Like I was sick of just commentating on his next Twitter snafu or whatever, but
I suppose in a way we're to blame for it partially because we talk about him all the time. That's I might true. Personally give out about him a lot, but we've definitely fed into that. Emmett, who would you have picked for Time Person of the Year?
I'd probably follow Scott Galloway's lead and go with Mackenzie Scott, Jeff Bezos's widow, who basically is divesting her wealth.
Not a widow.
Definitely not a widow, Emmett.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. It's the other one.
unless one of those Blue Origin launches has gone horrendously wrong in the last 20 minutes.
It's been a long week. Look, you know, it's near the end of the year. A long life to her. Mackenzie, if you're listening, we hope you're still alive and that rumors of your passing are grossly exaggerated.
What about you, Mike? Would you have gone with Elon?
Well, yeah, because like it's not the like the Time Person of the Year doesn't have to be a good thing.
Yeah.
And they picked like Hitler and Stalin. It was like the most influential figure for the year. I don't think there's many people who've been talked about less.
I think I would have went with Dolly Parton, but that's just me. So let's move on. So let's talk about Apple. Quick history lesson for you guys here. So it took Apple 42 years to reach a $1 trillion market cap. But as we record this, the company is teetering on the brink of a $3 trillion valuation. As an Irish person, that's a really hard thing to say, $3 trillion. This just means that the largest company in the world has managed to triple its market cap in just a little over 3 years. Emmett, part of me says that we shouldn't be fascinating over an arbitrary milestone like this. But then another part of me is just astounded that we're looking at a $3 trillion company. That's larger than the GDP of the UK, according to my quick Google search. What's your take on this? Did you ever think, and I suppose in all of your years as an investor, that we'd be looking at a company of this size?
I have to admit, James, I did not, or at least I didn't expect to see what we've seen for several decades. And as it happens, the day I founded My Wall Street with John, Apple shares were $17 and change, and the business was around $280 billion in size. And in that short intervening period, it's grown tenfold to over $170 a share, and as you said, now almost $3 trillion in size. But here's the thing. Most people stop comprehending numbers when they go into the high hundreds of thousands. Like, for example, as you guys know well, Ireland's largest sports stadium is Croke Park, which is the home of our beautiful national Gaelic sports. And at peak capacity, Croke Park, or Croker as it's known locally, holds 82,500 people, which when you're in there on All Ireland Final Day, which is the biggest sporting event in the Irish calendar, or if you're at a big gig, you get to see and you get to feel what that number of people looks and sounds like. So when I hear that Ireland's population is whatever it is, like 5 million people, I think that's 60 croakers full to capacity. So I'm benchmarking something I know to visualize something that's outside my everyday comprehension. And I can fly up in my imagination in a helicopter and see 60 Croke Parks full. And I know that that's the population of Ireland. Then when you go, well, what's a billion? In terms of a billion, well, it's 12,000 Croke Parks. And that's kind of crazy. There's not, you know, that doesn't make sense anymore. But then when you come to Apple, we're not talking about people, obviously, here. We're talking about dollars. And we're not talking about billions. We're talking about trillions. So what is 1 trillion? What is a trillion? Well, in my old physics days, I would have said it's 10 to the power of 12 or one with 12 zeros after it, which again means nothing. Yeah. You know, it doesn't mean anything to anyone. It's $1,000 billion. Now, here's something that I suppose starts to frame what that looks or feels like. If you were to count out $100 bills at a rate of 1 per second, it would take 10 seconds, obviously enough, to get to $1,000. It would take 3 hours to count out $1 million bucks, and that's a $100 note every second. And it would take 115 days to do $1 billion. Now we have to multiply that by 1,000 to get to a trillion, which means you would be counting out $100 bills at a rate of 1 per second for 321 years to get to a trillion. Or, so in other words, to get to Apple's valuation, you would be counting out for 1,000 years, $100 per second for 1,000 years. And what's happened again is that means nothing. It's now suddenly slipped out of our, I don't know what you call it, our cognitive circle or something, you know, the way we can picture things. Trillion is a number that's too big for most people to picture. If I say, well, you count out a $100 note per second for the next 1,000 years, people are like, that's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. 3 trillion miles is a half a light year. Now, that one blows my mind because I spent so much time looking at this kind of stuff once upon a time. That's amazing. Yeah. I don't know. Ireland's national debt is, I think it's a quarter of a trillion. It's in that order of magnitude. Another thing I Googled is apparently there's 37 trillion cells in the human body. Does that mean anything to anyone? No, it doesn't. We just don't encounter a trillion in anything we do in reality. So to see that, or to ask the question, did I ever think I'd see Apple would be a trillion or indeed a $3 trillion business? Or do I think it might someday be a $10 trillion business? Is beyond the comprehension or scope of sizing for a human brain. So yeah. Did I ever think it would be 3 trillion? Nah. Did I ever think it would be 10 trillion? Nah. I didn't think about it. Like you're at a level now where you just kind of apply your basic scope of understanding and try and bring it into something you understand.
And you mentioned the 10 trillion mark there. And I think that's a really interesting point that I remember a couple of years ago, all this excitement about these companies. You know, there was a few of them. I think Amazon was another one kind of nearing the 1 trillion and who would be first. And it seems that almost as soon as it passed, it's like, okay, well, 10 trillion is next. And like the order, like the massive amount of like space and multiplication needed between 1 trillion and 10 trillion is insane. And I think, you know, media often glosses over that. Mike, if you had pitched Apple to me as a high growth investment a couple of years ago, I probably would have rolled my eyes, as with most people. It was one of the biggest companies back then. But in the past 5 years, the stock has managed to grow sixfold, which is not a bad return by any means, especially a company of that size. Do we still think, you know, at $3 trillion, there's still room for this company to go grow? What parts of Apple's businesses excite you or you think where the next form of growth will come for this company?
Yeah, it's kind of depressing as a stock picker that like the most obvious staring you in the face business was the one that grew sixfold in 5 years, you know?
Yeah.
That's the phrase, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah, that's what Rory always says, you'll never get fired for picking Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. Just invest in big tech and forget about it. Yeah, no, I don't think we can underestimate like the influence and expanse that Apple's network has between iOS, its hardware devices, its App Store. It's so much of the internet like is being ran and within these walls that Apple has created. And we saw like its wider influence on like huge companies like Facebook. And like, you know, at the flick of a switch with iOS 14, it was able to completely disrupt one of the biggest companies in the world. So I think the scale of Apple, and like as Emmett said there on his tirade, like as in we can't really imagine how big it actually is and how much influence it has. So in terms of what's next, like as in I know they put in patent applications for VR and AR headsets. You know, that's likely the next frontier of the internet and the metaverse and everything else. And I can see no reason why Apple wouldn't own that too.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely.
But apart from like nice shiny gadgets, I think an inevitable part of Apple's future will be services. And we can envisage a whole load of them now, like, you know, home entertainment and video games and TV and music and everything. But like they will come out with things we haven't yet imagined. Like connected fitness is there and it's a label that we've all looked at, and connected healthcare but connected safety and connected nutrition and possibly even genetics. You know, like there will be new layers of services brought to us by human-centric technology that we just haven't seen yet. It's inevitable. And I know they even spoke about cars, and I think, is it Project Titan was the one where they had like 1,000 people secretly, it wasn't a great secret, yeah, developing a car, and then they were doing something with Hyundai, and then they had these companies, Faraday Futures and 68 Research, that they clearly was the worst kept secret in the valley. So everything from automotive to genetics, I think, is in the radar. The bigger the opportunity, the higher the likelihood Apple will creep in there.
I just think Apple decides when the trend starts. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
wireless headphones, and now AirPods alone are making more money than Nvidia and Spotify and Shopify. And it's just
the abuse they got when they unleashed those AirPods. Like everyone, like the whole internet was like making fun of them. And then now everybody has them.
Yeah, I think it could be. I think it could be when Apple released those headsets that is when it starts. That's the kickoff point. It doesn't matter if Facebook are messing around with Oculus, and I know Microsoft are talking about it as well. But like Apple are the decision makers when it comes to this for the wider public.
And even just talking then about all of those different areas that we can see Apple already involved in or potentially getting involved in, the next question is obviously a $3 trillion company with so much influence. We often hear criticism against the likes of Google and Facebook for having too much influence on, you know, modern society and civic discourse and things like that. When are we going to reach a point where people are like, right, Apple needs to be broken up, they're too big?
You know, this has been a threat to business, you know, if we call it a threat, for a very, very long time. There was a thing called the Sherman Antitrust Act, which was passed in 1890 in America in response to price fixing by the Apples of the day, which were companies like American Tobacco and International Harvester and businesses that are just no longer relevant. And it gave the government power to act in the interest of consumers and, I suppose, in the interest of competition, which I suppose has a dotted line to the interest of consumers. And that has always been the case. So since 1890, government and regulation has tried to stop businesses getting overpowered. And the last like super monopoly that I can think of was AT&T in America, which was smashed up by the government into a whole load of all these different parts. And I personally think it is inevitable that governments will try to smash up or impede Apple's growth. But you have to wonder, has it got to a scale size now with resources at its disposal that just, I don't want to say is unstoppable, but is going to be very, very difficult to impede.
Yeah,
I think the judge in the Epic Games case said something along the lines of you can't punish success. You know? And like this platform and ecosystem and network that Apple have created is from its success. I can't imagine, just because of the interconnectivity of all of kind of its products, it would be tough to break it up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it also benefits from direct comparisons with the likes of Facebook and Google. They're never going to look as bad or as evil as them in some cases. So that probably benefits them. So we're going to move on. But you know, Microsoft is about $2.5 trillion. Alphabet, Amazon, and Tesla are all in the $1 trillion club. Do we think Microsoft will be the next $3 trillion company, or with Tesla's pace of growth, could it pass it out?
Yeah, why not? You know, I don't know what a trillion is. Sure. Yeah. I think it will.
Whatever.
Put me down. Yeah. Yeah, bring it. Yeah, $3 trillion. Yeah, I'm good with that. Why not? You know, I explained.
It's only zeros.
Sounds like we're done with this conversation. Let's move on to something in the last few podcasts, we've been talking a lot about electric cars and trucks and stuff like that. But here's something I don't think we have ever spoken about, which is electric motorbikes.
Love electric motorbikes.
I've caught your attention. So earlier this week, LiveWire, the electric motorbike company that was spun out from Harley Davidson last year, announced that it was going to go public through a SPAC. And the deal set the value LiveWire at just under $2 billion, with Harley Davidson retaining a 74% stake in the company. LiveWire produces EV bikes that sell for about $20,000 and get approximately 145 miles of range. Famously, these are the bikes that were used by Ewan McGregor and Charlie Boorman in their 11-part Apple TV series Long Way Up, which I think was out last year. Emmett, I know you were a big fan of that program.
Brilliant show.
Mike, I'm going to come to you first, though. To me, Harley Davidson is one of those iconic old school American brands, but it's not a brand that I immediately associate with green energy or saving the environment. It's one I kind of associate with leather jackets and cans of Natty Light. What do you think? Is this perhaps one of the reasons why Harley Davidson spun out this company, that it didn't fit in with the wider brand?
Yeah, I think the reason why it was spun out is because there was smart people there at Harley Davidson who realized they were not going to get the kind of multiples that electric vehicle companies get if Livewire was part of Harley Davidson, you know?
Okay.
So the way to get the most value out of this division and out of all this investment was to make it its own separate company. And I think if you compare, like, say, Ford and GM, they haven't done this because they see their electric vehicles as being their main business eventually, okay, whereas Harley Davidson will still maintain the two separate brands. So in terms of fitting into the wider brand, I don't see why eco-friendly would be a turnoff, but like maybe there is this perception of hairy old school biker loves the sound of diesel or whatever. I don't think it's that per se. I do think it's because by making an independent electric bike company, it's going to get a valuation probably more deserving of the potential there rather than holding on to kind of this legacy company with it, you know?
That's an interesting point. Emmett, you're obviously a big fan of electric motorbikes. Are you a fan of this company? Would you be interested in potentially investing in it?
I'm pretty sure I was a shareholder in HOG a very long time ago. HOG is Harley's ticker. I had finished a case study in 06 during a master's in strategy where they learned me that Harley creates a demand with what I suppose you'd call a synthetic line or a queue, as we say here in Ireland.
Yeah.
And at that time, if you walked into a Harley dealership with cash, you were still forced to wait for months and I think maybe even years for your bike, even if they had a whole pile of them on the factory floor. And this, of course, creates demand because you can only want what you do not have, such as the nature of the human soul. And that was quite an interesting strategy at that time in 06. And I think, you know, handbag manufacturers and kind of luxury goods manufacturers play the same game. You know, there's no big deal for them to turn out enough to meet demand, but they slow it down in order to make sure that demand is pent up.
But with the likes of those companies then, I know Rory often talks about Michael Kors, you know, it's a difficult thing to scale then.
It is really hard.
You can really, if you tip the balance too much, you lose a very important branding feature.
Huge. I mean, Michael Kors is a case study on strategic drift. You know, they were exclusive in Bowman's strategy clock. They were kind of up in the top right hand side, which is like high price, hard to get, very exclusive. You can't actually, if our listeners Google Bowman's strategy clock, it's a very nice device for just picturing where any product sits. And inside that kind of 360 degree arc, there's this zone of failure where you try to be more than one thing at once. And Michael Kors drifted from luxury into mass market and tried to maintain both. You just can't do it. Whether Harley, I think Harley is a premium brand that's accessible to most professionals. It's not pure luxury, but it's premium. But I don't know. I'm just riffing here.
well,
keep going.
Is that
put another 50p in him?
Well, I think the fact that Livewire is choosing to go public through a SPAC, that really caught my eye because, you know, a couple of months ago on this podcast, we couldn't help but talk about SPACs. And it seems the landscape has dried up a little bit recently. Mm-hmm. Emmett, what's your thoughts on the current SPAC landscape? Do you think it's losing its luster a little bit?
James, it took me something like 15 years to learn that I should only buy companies 6 months after they IPO. And it was a rule that I swore by. I lived by it. When Rory started my Wall Street, he had this like insatiable appetite. Tell me everything you know. And I threw books at him and I told him everything I learned. One of the things I said was you never buy a company within 6 months of IPO because they're still learning the ropes and the management team have to adjust their cadence, etc. Anyway, I was all for my own rules. And then along came SPACs. In force anyway, like SPACs have been around for 20 years, but they kind of came into all our attention spans in the last couple of years. And I found myself buying into companies that had not gone through a traditional IPO process and were not listed for 6 months. In essence, I broke two of the rules in one fell swoop. Well, I don't know if they're losing their luster, but I can certainly see there's massive benefits to a SPAC for founders of businesses who can get their life's work, if that's what it is, floated in like 6 weeks with any due process. But from a retail investor side, which is us, they most certainly have lost their luster for me. I carry around a pretty large helping of annoyance at myself for not being more skeptical. I'm really annoyed at myself. Each SPAC is its own story. So it's wrong for me to say that they're all good or all bad. There's certainly some very high quality businesses out there as a result of a SPAC, and names jump into my mind as I say that. But they are still here and they're still going strong. But I personally have redeveloped I suppose, what would I say, a caution. Now, at the end of Q3 this year, there were 500 SPAC IPOs. So literally just a few weeks ago, 500 gone out the door this year.
Yeah.
And seemingly that number is only set to get higher this month, this in Q4, I mean, to say. What I would say to our listeners, if they've interest in SPACs, there's a really good website. It's SPACtrack.net. And if you go to SPACtrack.net and even put in /active SPACs, it shows a nice list of every SPAC that's out there looking for a home. It shows the size of the check, if you will, and who's behind it. And it's an interesting website that I've been watching for the last couple of years.
Yeah, one thing I often found interesting about SPACs was that they seem to be a good home for these producers of electric vehicles. You know, so we have LiveWire going public to a SPAC. We've had some successful ones like Lucid Motors, for example, but there's also been a lot of flops like Lordstown and Nikola. The EV industry is still in its very, very early days. Do we think that a lot of these companies went via the SPAC route because they perhaps don't have the financials to back up a massive public listing, and a SPAC was an easy way to get it to market and perhaps a more concealed way, if you were to be a cynic?
I think it was the opposite of concealed, because they could say whatever they wanted. It was way too open. They were allowed kind of put in their own revenue projections. I think something like 5 different EV SPACs said they would break Google's record of the fastest company to get $10 billion in revenue.
So is the opposite of concealed lying? I didn't know that.
No, sorry, maybe conceal is the wrong word, but... yeah, they were just allowed to say too much. Whereas if you look at a traditional IPO process, they're kind of not allowed to say anything before. They're not allowed to make any projections. So I think it did. It's a new way of going public, and I don't think it's going to go away. But I do think that in its infancy, it was allowed to get away with way too much. And like certain founders were given far too much rope, and some of them took the mic, like Nikola, like Lordstown as well. So yeah, it's the same with any kind of financial vehicle. There's always going to be someone who's going to try to take advantage of it. And I think because SPACs were this new thing and there was such an excitement about it, maybe they were the easiest to take advantage of. But long term, they're going to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's move on then. So what's going on in my Wall Street at the minute? Well, we're coming to the end of yet another year, but there's still loads of great investing analysis coming out of my Wall Street HQ. I've details about a very special live stream that you, when you're listening to this, you'll actually be able to catch up on, but I'll fill you in more on that at the end of this show. But don't forget that next week we have our annual big fat wrap up of the year for Stock Club. In that episode, the whole analyst team will come onto the podcast and we'll go over some of the biggest stories from 2021. And I'll also needle them into making some predictions for 2022. Emmett, we need to find out how your prediction for this year went. Can you even remember what it was?
James, you know I can remember. And you have to ask me this on a show where Rory is co-hosting so I can eyeball him. And we're on Zoom. I predicted that Macy's would at least double in 2021. And on the day I said that, or rather on the day that that podcast went live, Macy's was $10 a share. Today it's $25 a share. So you have to ask me again next week.
Next week.
I don't remember what Rory said, but I know what I said.
I think Rory had something to do with Spotify, but I'll nail him appropriately on next week's podcast. Don't worry about that. So in addition to that podcast, which you can catch up on next week, we have a new stock coming to my Wall Street on Monday, a new stock being added to Horizon. Watch this too over the next few days, and plenty of other great stuff to get you through the festive season. So make sure to keep an eye out for all of that. Mailbag. For this week's mailbag, we're taking a question sent in to us by Stephen at pod@mywallstreet.com. Stephen asks us, with the likes of Disney, Square and Nike all getting into NFTs and the crypto game in general becoming more mainstream, do we think that Coinbase could be a good investment as a pick and shovel play? I thought this is a really good question. Mike, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like this is a conversation, I think JT or Emmett, one of you told me anyways, when you were going to Silicon Valley first, when my Wall Street started, I think a lot of questions you were getting were, why don't you start a brokerage instead? And your response, and it was quite a prescient one for the time, this is 7 or 8 years ago, was that that industry is a race to the bottom. And like, look at it now, like there's no commissions on trades anymore, basically, with all the major brokers. I think we'll see similar movements in the crypto world. Like being a middleman is not a great business model. I think technology is always going to catch up. If you're the one in the transaction not adding value, I think you're going to get squeezed out of the deal eventually. And even though that as well, like it's been only a couple of months since it went public, but it's also been tracking the price of Bitcoin pretty closely since its public debut. So I'm not sure if that fits into the pick and shovel mode. But the Wolf of Harcourt Street on Twitter, he's a good follow, by the way, actually. He's Irish stock content producer, I suppose. He actually pointed out that NFT service is now a trending topic on Fiverr, the freelancing site. So if you are looking for a pick and shovel, this could be an interesting way of playing it.
Yeah. And are they, is it artists offering to make pictures that can be turned into NFTs, or people offering to create NFTs, or have you looked?
I think it's the artists. I'm not sure exactly.
Okay. Interesting. Okay, cool. Thanks for that. That was a good answer. Okay, guys, let's finish out today, as always, with an elevator pitch. So later on this evening, we're recording this on Thursday, we're holding our first ever live stream in celebration of Horizon's 2-year anniversary. On this live stream, you guys, plus Rory and Anne-Marie, will be pitching me the one stock you'd buy and hold for the next 12 years. And it's similar to what you're doing with your portfolio in Horizon. And by the time you guys, I mean listeners, hear this, the live stream will be over, but you will be able to catch up on the replay on our social channels and also take part in the competition. The closing date for that competition is Friday at 5 p.m. So if you're listening to this Friday morning, make sure to get on that quickly and find out more details on the recording of the live stream. But to give you a teaser of what you can expect on this live stream, Evan and Mike, I want you guys to give me the elevator pitch of a stock that you're going to pitch on the live stream later. This stock is one that you'd buy and hold for 12 years in the very much in the spirit of Emmett, what you're trying to do with Horizon. Mike, I'll come to you first. What stock are you going to pitch us later?
The company I'm pitching is Unity Software. So I mentioned Apple's kind of mixed reality headsets earlier, and Facebook and Microsoft honing in on the metaverse as well. So this is kind of a pick and shovel play for the metaverse. So I could have mentioned it actually in the last question as well. But I kind of see Unity as being like one of the main benefactors of kind of this move to the next, I suppose, digital frontier, essentially. So what Unity does is it enables developers to create interactive 3D content for gaming, augmented and virtual reality. Think something like Photoshop on steroids, essentially. The company that's going to entertain you when you're there.
Okay, cool. You're talking a lot about the metaverse recently. Might we see a rebranding of Mike to Meta? Meta O'Mahony.
Meta World Peace, yeah.
Yeah, think about it. I think it would suit you. Emmett, what about you?
I'm going to go with Veeva, which is a company that helps pharma companies manage sales and operations and general regulatory compliance, which is a very complex thing for drug development companies. The company was founded in 07 by a guy called Peter Gassner, who worked in Salesforce.com. And apparently, according to his bio, he actually built the platform. Now, I'm sure other people helped. But when I pitched later, or when I pitched yesterday, as our listeners, for our listeners' logic, there's three reasons I'm pitching the business. They almost never lose a customer, because switching to another provider is just so complex and messy. And apart from anything, there's no other clear competitor. So that's the first reason I like them. Secondly, the company is expanding into other industries. So it's going beyond pharma. It's moving into cosmetics and general consumer goods and chemicals. So it means there's other avenues for growth. And finally, they have really beautiful economics. Like, the economics of the business are very, very attractive, which I won't dive into. In fact, I'm going to go for a fourth reason, which is that CEO, Peter Gassner, who I mentioned as the founder, is highly respected by staff and in the industry, and is clearly a visionary in the space. So I think Veeva is a great stock to just sell it and forget it for 12 years.
Absolutely. Would you say it's the most boring company we have in my Wall Street and Horizon?
I had to drink a coffee halfway through that pitch.
Yeah. Well, I actually wouldn't even... Pure Storage is another one of those companies that whenever anyone talks about it, it's just like white noise, white noise, white noise. But Veeva, you made Veeva interesting, Emmett, so I'll give you a pat on the back for that.
Thanks, man.
So don't forget, if you're listening to this on Friday, you can catch up with that live stream and find out what stocks Rory and Anne-Marie pitched, as well as more details about the competition we're running for Horizon. But for now, that's it for today's show. Remember, if you have any questions you'd like us to answer or elevator pitches you'd like us to tackle, make sure to get in touch. You can find us on Twitter, that's at My Wall Street HQ, on TikTok, that's at My Wall Street, or simply just email us at pod@mywallstreet.com. And if you agree with Mike changing his name to Meta, maybe send in your answers and we'll do a vote. We could do a public name changing. Mike, I can see you're kind of moving away from your camera there. If you're enjoying the show, make sure to tell your friends all about us, and don't forget to leave a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen to us on. Thanks for joining us today, and from the three of us here, we'll see you next week.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.